Well, whether we like it or not, we are surrounded by emoji. They appear in politics and movies and drug deals and even our sex lives, high-profile lawsuits, and much, much more. But emoji's impact has never been fully explored in full. In their new book, Face with Tears of Joy, A Natural History of Emoji, Keith Houston follows emoji from its birth in 1990s Japan, traces its Western explosion in the 2000s, and considers emoji's ever-expanding lexicon. For Houston, emoji are a form of information technology. This is what he works with in his day job, and all of his previous books like Shady Characters, The Book, and Empire of the Sun delve into information technologies of one kind or another. Yet despite his work on the history of typography, emoji were a mystery to him. Face with Tears of Joy tells the whole story of emoji for the first time. It is a great pleasure to welcome Keith Houston to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. What a delight.
Thank you for having me.
So I talk about your work. Does this mean at some point you thought to yourself, okay, well, I probably won't be able to get away with not writing about emoji?
Oh, that's an interesting question. So my first book had been on unusual marks of punctuation. And although it wasn't about punctuation usage as such, that incidentally creeps into it. You can't talk about punctuation without talking about how you use it. But emoji, just, it became increasingly apparent to me that we are using emoji not precisely like punctuation, although in some cases we use them exactly like punctuation, but they live in and amongst our words in a way which is very reminiscent of punctuation. And I think you're doing yourself a disservice at this point in time if you just dismiss them, if you don't imagine that they are important. I guess, you know, you may not believe in emoji, but they certainly believe in you. So it's it's worth knowing what they are and how they work, even if you don't like them, even if you don't want to use them. And so there was just a point, I think it was around about 2015, 2016, where it seemed that they were everywhere. And I felt like I'd almost missed the boat, having written about all these unusual marks of punctuation, these old-fashioned typographic and handwritten marks. This new class of typographic mark had appeared, and I'd been caught napping a little bit. So, perhaps I did feel like I had to write about them in some way.
Do you feel that most people who use them regularly fully understand them?
I think that a lot of people, I think that are, I guess like anything, there are perhaps a number of different ways that you can use emoji. I think a lot of people use them in quite a superficial way. They pick an emoji that they think reflects how they're feeling or a sentiment they want to convey. And that's fine. They are pictures of things, and often a picture of a thing is what you need to really get across what you're feeling. I think that a lot of people use them in a slightly deeper way. They have a kind of vibe-based approach to emoji. So they see an emoji and they use it in a way where they don't necessarily, they're not translating some feeling or some word or concept into emoji. I think it's a very direct use of it. There's something about pictures that I think our brains interpret in a slightly more visceral, more immediate way than words. And so I think it's possible perhaps to use emoji in that way. They can in some ways represent or convey what we're feeling in a slightly more direct, if mysterious, way. And then you've got people who really are very good at it. And I think they think of emoji as being almost like a special lexicon or vocabulary. And so they're using it in very sophisticated ways. They're using them like punctuation. They're using them like actual words, or they're replacing words with emoji. They're replacing parts of words with emoji. They're using them as kind of body language, I guess, for the web. So there's a big spectrum of how people use them.
It's fascinating. You read about this in the book, but prior to what we know of as emoji and them being available to us on our devices, many people would use what was on the keyboard as a way of drawing and adding some sort of additional shrug or something that was a that was an indicator that has now been replaced by the emoji. But that's sort of what came before it, right?
That's right. So, as you say, before emoji existed as a kind of standalone entity or as this distinct category of things, we often used what were called emoticons. So I might type a colon and then a dash and then a closing parenthesis, and that makes a smiley face, or
right.
a colon, a dash, and then an opening parenthesis, which makes a sad face. And that was typically used in the West. I think the first that's usually credited to postgraduate researcher called Scott Falman, who I think was at Carnegie Mellon University, and he created them almost as a joke. I think it was in the early 80s, but they caught on. And certainly I remember, before I was aware of emoji, I used emoticons quite widely in the same sort of context that I would use emoji now, I think. But then separately, over in Japan, there was a similar kind of mark called kaomoji. And the interesting thing about kaomoji is that, actually, if we start with emoticons, you kind of have to turn your head. You have to imagine rotating your frame of reference by 90 degrees so you can see the eyes and the nose and the mouth, which is funny because our writing runs from from left to right. And
right.
Emoji are at this kind of 90 degree, emoticons rather, that it's kind of 90 degree angle. Kaomoji, which was invented in Japan, and typically in Japanese and Chinese, words run from top to bottom and right to left. Kaomoji, you don't have to rotate your head. So again, kaomoji are at 90 degrees to their host language. They're just quite cleverly constructed from not just the letters and numbers and punctuation marks that we have access to, but a much wider set. So there are a lot of Japanese characters that are used in kaomoji that look quite elaborate. And so kaomoji can often be very descriptive. There's an excellent one of someone flipping a table over because they're very angry. And it's not something you dash off in 2 seconds. You know, you have to have it saved to some kind of quick access list. So it's not like an emoticon where it's 3 keystrokes and you're done. They're much more complicated than that. But done well, they're spectacular.
You write in the book, in 2011, Apple became the first big tech company in the West to visibly embrace emoji. But Google had been working on it prior to that.
They had. So Google in the sort of mid to late 2000s had been wanting to expand into Asia. And one of the things they wanted to do was to launch Gmail, which was their email service. And some of the people who worked for Google in Japan said, we can't launch this without supporting this thing called emoji. And what they meant was the Japanese mobile phone carriers, NTT, KDDI, and SoftBank, had each come up with their own lexicon of these little graphical characters that users could embed in amongst text. And this is really where modern emoji comes from. It was Japanese mobile carriers wanting to add this ability to have a bit more emotion in particularly emails and SMS messages exchanged over their networks. And so each of the big mobile networks in Japan had their own set of emoji. And the way that text works on a computer, basically, is that each character, so the letter A has a number behind it, the letter B has a different number behind it, and so on. Marks of punctuation, numbers, anything that you can type on a computer or read on a computer fundamentally has a number underneath it. And the problem was that each of these mobile carriers had their own, not only their own list of emoji, but they had their own lists of numbers. And so whenever you sent an emoji from one phone to another, if it was within the same network, everything was fine. If it crossed to a different network, your phone had to do a bit of sort of computational gymnastics to figure out what emoji the user had sent and which of your emoji was most closely related. So Google did the same thing. They started to work on Gmail in Japan, and they built this ability to translate between these different emoji lexicons. And I think they realized this is a bad idea. This is not scalable. We need a standard. So they went to an organization called the Unicode Consortium. And this is a kind of... it's really difficult to explain what it is. It's basically a group of people who are seconded to it from big tech companies like Adobe, Apple, Google, now Facebook, Microsoft, And they kind of decide how text should travel between computers, between mobile phones. And they also decide what numbers all of these characters get. So Google went to Unicode and said, we'd like to standardize this. And they got started doing so. But Google actually launched Emoji in Gmail before the standardization was complete. Apple launched Emoji on the iPhone before the standardization was complete. And it more or less worked. So yeah, they were both Google and Apple were pretty much there at the beginning. Although I think if anyone gets the credit for really bringing it to the West, it's probably Google.
And you're talking about Unicode. One of the things you bring up in the book, which I found really interesting, is if you have the question of why is there a smiling poop emoji and not a frowning poop emoji, it's because someone within Unicode had decided that that's the way it's going to be.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. The funny thing is, if you like internet standards bodies, and I guess I do, Unicode got started encoding existing texts. So towards the late 80s, a bunch of engineers got together and they kind of had the same realization that Google had, that are all of these different computers in different countries have different ways of representing text. And this is a pain in the neck when it comes to exchanging documents between computers. So this is where Unicode came from. And what Unicode did at first was it looked at things like, okay, how do computers in the US exchange text? How do computers in Europe exchange text? How do computers in Japan or China exchange text? And so they built a kind of a single list of characters to rule them all, and they gave all of the characters their own numbers. But they weren't inventing any characters. All they were doing were taking characters that already existed. And so when Google came to them with emoji, they did the same thing. There were a number of different lists of emoji. Unicode reconciled them all. They said, well, these two look like they're the same. They'll just get a single number. These two look different, so they'll get their own numbers. And they did that with emoji. And they standardized emoji, and gradually it became available in more and more devices. And then as people started to use them, they started to realize that there were some quite, they're relatively speaking, quite large holes in emoji's coverage of one thing or another. So a lot of the early emoji had light-colored faces, and that doesn't really represent the bulk of humanity in a very equitable way. A lot of the depictions of people doing jobs, like a police officer or dancer, were very much, the police officer was a man, the dancer was a woman. So there were a lot of quite dated views of gender roles in there. Speaking of gender roles, there was no concept of someone who wasn't a woman or visibly a woman or a man. There was no just person. So there were all of these different issues with emoji, and Unicode was kind of encouraged, I think, by a significant amount of negative press to do something about it. And so they started to add new emoji. They started to fill in the gaps. Some of it was big important stuff. So they addressed the skin color issue or the skin tone issue. They started to make it possible to have jobs be represented as male or female or just a person. And then they started to do a few smaller things, like if there was a particularly popular sport that wasn't represented in emoji, they might add that. And this kind of opened the floodgates. This changed the way that emoji existed as compared to, say, the Latin alphabet or Japanese kanji. It wasn't fixed. It was open-ended. And this is where the Unicode, as you point out, with the face with the sort of the poop with a smiling face. Why is there not a poop with a frowning face? Well, there's a poop with a smiling face because the poop was one of the earliest emoji. And at some point, someone did propose to Unicode, why don't we have a frowning one? And this was at a point where a lot of the people in Unicode were starting to get a bit concerned that emoji were taking up too much of their time. It's called Emojigeddon by the press, these internal debates. And someone, one particular Unicode contributor who'd basically had it with emoji, wrote a very strongly worded email saying, this is ridiculous. We do not need a poop with a frowning face. What's next? A poop with a karaoke mic. And he effectively won. That particular viewpoint won the day, and that's why we only have the smiling poop. But it is really interesting that emoji are now this open-ended thing, which is unique, really, amongst the different languages or different scripts that we use online.
So I know there was a kerfuffle when people realized, oh, there used to be a gun and now there isn't. Yeah. You know, so they also will take away things too that are no longer there are no longer seem to be wise for society to have access to. And I assume in the same token that I don't know your opinion on this, but will we ever have a penis emoji, or will it always just be an eggplant?
That's a really interesting one. So I think there are two interesting things this says. Unicode technically never takes any emoji away, but equally, they don't dictate exactly how they should look. And so that's what happened to the pistol emoji. Apple was the first company that said, we don't really want a realistic gun in here. And they changed it to water pistol. And many other companies did the same thing. In fact, eventually, pretty much all pistol emoji were water pistols. Recently, X, formerly Twitter, has just changed it back, which feels on brand for X at the moment.
Yes.
But the interesting thing is that, yeah, the pistol still exists. It differs depending on which platform you're looking at it. But the second thing, Unicode says that there are certain things that they won't do with emoji. They will never have branded emoji. It'll never be possible to buy an emoji with like a Coke logo or a Nike logo on it, for example. They will never depict a god. They will never do anything where any sort of intellectual property comes into question. And I don't know if it's explicitly stated or not, but I don't think they would have any plans to do any sort of genitalia, for example. I'd have to look that one up. I'm not sure it's explicitly a rule, but certainly they've shied away from it. And of course, your seasoned emoji user will know that you don't need a penis emoji because the aubergine or eggplant emoji is right there and everyone knows what it means. Well, at least I hope they do.
Yes, I think most people do. But as to how we use them, and one other point that I think is important in the book is that this then goes beyond our texting and beyond our communication with online communication and becomes something that are just symbols of our society and our culture.
Yeah. So there are certain emoji which are very explicitly cultural because they came out of Japan. A lot of early emoji are very specific to Japanese culture. But more broadly beyond that, I think there's a couple of interesting things. One is you mentioned that they now just form part of our culture. I mean, yes, they do. So Sony released the Emoji Movie a few years back to universally terrible reviews. I watched it. I made myself watch it as part of writing the book, and I kind of wish that I didn't have to or hadn't had to. It's not a good film. Two thumbs down. And you can buy plush poop emoji. For a while, there was a bit of a fashion for putting emoji on clothes, as in sort of, you know, high fashion clothes for rich people to wear. Now they tend to end up on things like pajamas for kids. But yeah, they are sort of everywhere. I think perhaps maybe one thing that's worth thinking about is that, for example, the yellow smiley face was that's the iconic emoji, or it's the pattern for many emoji. That of course existed before emoji. The characteristic yellow smiley face was designed in the 1960s, and it came to mean lots of things. I guess the one that always strikes me is it was a big symbol of rave culture, especially in the UK. So certain emoji or certain of the things that are depicted by emoji already had a lot of cultural importance. So it isn't necessarily that emoji has changed their culture, but it's maybe propagated some stuff and made it a bit more widely visible than it was before.
You say in the book, to peer into emoji's future then is to see more of the same. That seems like a good way to describe it.
Yeah, so we've talked about Unicode and what the responsibility is. They've kind of tried to get out of having to deal with emoji a couple of times. They don't necessarily want to be voting on whether we have a smiling or a frowning poop emoji. They don't want to have to care about what type of bean is depicted by the bean emoji. But they've never quite managed to get out of it. And so it seems to be like they have said that they're going to scale it down a bit. They're not going to vote in as many new emoji. And they've explicitly ruled out any new flags, for example. Turns out flags, apart from national flags, are very underused. So they're trying to limit the scope for the expansion of emoji in the future. But I think other companies, effectively commercial interests, have kind of taken emoji and run with it. So there's a technical definition of what an emoji is. It's a little picture that you can transmit from device to device in the same way as text, in amongst text. But there was a bit of there was a kind of craze for what were called emoji for a while. So kind of stickers, pictures of celebrities rendered like emoji, for example, or in a cartoonish way. So Kim Kardashian famously released an app called Kimoji, which sold a huge number of copies, made her a lot of money, and lots of other celebrities followed. And Apple is doing a thing. Actually, Google and Apple give you the ability to make your own emoji or your own emoji-like characters. And you cannot yet send them reliably from one device to another in amongst your text unless you're on an Apple device. And in that case, you can. If you use what's called the Genmoji feature to build a new emoji on an Apple device, you can embed it in your text as if it's the smiling face, the face with tears of joy, the smiling poop. And the recipient won't know the difference unless they know that they're looking at an emoji that you built with Apple's AI tool. It will look like any other to them. So this is quite an interesting change in what emoji are. They're no longer this kind of fixed vocabulary. You can now, in the right context, build your own. And I don't know if I like that. And I think, in a sense, English is fun. Languages are fun because you have to be creative within a largely closed system. You can make words up if you like, but you have to be very good at it for it to work. Emoji are the same. If you can be creative in this closed system, I think it works really well. But if there is no, if the system has no bounds, what does that mean for creativity? What does that mean for meaning? I don't really know.
The name of the book is Face with Tears of Joy, A Natural History of Emoji. The book is from Norton. Keith Houston, the book is fascinating and just a blast. I thank you so much for writing it, but also for sharing with us this morning. It's been a great, great pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Be well. Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is Face with Tears of Joy, A Natural History of Emoji. The book is by Keith Houston, published by Norton. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.